this anxious behavior manifests as an indirect expression of hostility. It's hostile when you block somebody out. It's hostile when you make somebody feel insignificant. No matter what they say, it's not heard. That's a form of hostility, guised, right, under the guise of anxiety. Now, I can understand you might object to this and claim that you're simply preoccupied. You're anxious. You're not intending any aggression. To that, I would acknowledge your perspective. I don't believe you, or perhaps your partner, are intentionally acting out aggression. Rather, it's the unconscious aspect of hostility and aggression I mentioned earlier. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Narcissism Decoder. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Mazzella. In a recent episode, we delved into one significant cause of anxiety. In psychoanalytic terms, this is what we call shame stress. This type of anxiety arises when there's a large discrepancy between one's self-image and their actual level of functioning. If you want to learn more about the relationship between shame, humiliation, embarrassment, and anxiety, be sure to listen to episode 17 on how to take charge of your anxiety. Shame stress, we came to see and discuss, frequently triggers an inner critical voice, bombarding you with negative messages like, you're lazy, you're not good enough, something is wrong with you, you're a failure. This critical inner voice is another potent cause of anxiety, and it's fueled by underlying aggression. So there are two causes of anxiety, shame stress and underlying aggression. And if you want to learn more about the relationship between aggression and anxiety, be sure to listen to episode 18 on anxiety and aggression. This aggression isn't always overt. For some individuals, it may be repressed or split off, manifesting itself indirectly. In other words, the aggression emerges as anxiety, or even manifest in bodily symptoms, such as stomach ailments or panic attacks. If there is inner aggression, it must manifest in some way or form. In other words, it comes out. Okay, you might begin to notice the connection between anxiety and narcissism. Frequently, what triggers the onset of anxiety is the necessity to maintain a flawless and idealized self-image. That's where it starts. Let's now delve a little deeper into this topic. So this episode will focus on and explore the question, what other links exist between anxiety and narcissism? Focusing solely on one's fault can prevent you from considering the reactions of friends or loved ones. It's like being encapsulated in a bubble of self-criticism, blocking out the view of the outside world. Anxiety can create a narrative where you become the central figure, with others seemingly excluded from the story. In here lies the link between anxiety and narcissism. Take, for example, a female dancer who once told me that when out dancing in a club, she gets quite anxious. And when this was explored, she spoke about how all the guys want to dance with her. Why can't these guys just leave me alone and let me dance? Why do all the guys need to come around me? I don't know what it is. There are other women there, and there are other women dancing, but they all want to dance with me, she tells me in a very anxious way. Why don't they bother any of the other girls that I'm with? Why do all the men come to me? I think you get the point. On the surface, she presents as anxious, but perhaps you can hear the narcissistic position that she puts herself in. All the attention is on her. All the men want her. No other women exist in the club aside from her. If you've ever been around someone experiencing intense anxiety, you might relate to feeling somewhat excluded from their world. Here's another simple example. You're at a party, engaged in a conversation with a colleague or friend, perhaps sharing a story, when they glance at their phone. Instead of mingling with other guests or partygoers, you find yourself ruminating, obsessing on this event. Thoughts flood your mind. Why did they look at their phone? Am I boring? Did they think I was stupid? Was I not making sense? These self-critical thoughts consume and distract you for the remainder of the social event. So, how do you relate to someone like this? You may be wondering. The first rule of thumb, from my experience, is if reassurance is not working, in other words, if you've already tried to reassure them that, no, you're not stupid, I don't think you're boring, then you need to step out of this. Why? Because this role can be quite frustrating. So, the first order of business is not to get entangled in the narcissistic anxious web. No, I do not mean creating a boundary. I do not mean walking away from this family member or friend. What I found helpful in my work with these individuals is guiding them to start questioning these automatic, parenthetically narcissistic thoughts. Here's an example. Can that person have looked at their phone for any other reason other than your impact on them? The aim is not to challenge the narcissistic piece. Instead, these questions and observations are designed to gradually soften the harshness of the critical inner voice. But let's just think about this for a moment. What occurs when you find it difficult to truly listen to someone speaking to you? Take a moment yourself to reflect on this question. Have you ever attempted to converse with someone who's gripped by anxiety? And if so, what's the feeling? Perhaps your partner is convinced that you are unfaithful, that you have another man or woman in your life. They are flooded with anxiety, and they're completely convinced that you don't love or you don't care about them anymore. Their incessant rumination and self-criticism can evoke a sense of helplessness within you. You offer reassurance. You try to convince them that you love and you care about them, but it seems impossible to counteract their unwavering belief that they are inadequate or have failed in some way. If you have experienced this with someone, or if you found yourself trapped in your own rumination without realizing it, remember one thing. This isn't a deliberate act. However, unintentionally, that person renders you, because they can't hear anything you have to say, impotent, insignificant, and helpless. In other words, it's so frustrating when you are constantly reassuring someone and they completely blot you out. Now, you may have observed that we've come full circle. This anxious behavior manifests as an indirect expression of hostility. It's hostile when you block somebody out. It's hostile when you make somebody feel insignificant. No matter what they say, it's not heard. That's a form of hostility, guised, right, under the guise of anxiety. Now, I can understand. You might object to this and claim that you're simply preoccupied. You're anxious. You're not intending any aggression. To that, I would acknowledge your perspective. I don't believe you, or perhaps your partner, are intentionally acting out aggression. Rather, it's the unconscious aspect of hostility and aggression I mentioned earlier. Remember earlier I mentioned that your aggression comes out in anxiety. Remember I said your aggression has to come out some way. It comes out in physiological symptoms such as stomach problems or panic attacks. Well, this is another way it comes out. Maybe we could call this passive aggressive. You're not overtly aggressive, but people around you are getting frustrated or annoyed. This constant and excessive tension in you, which is felt as anxiety, merely represents the danger of being destroyed by this harsh, critical, betraying voice, which emanates from within you, or in this example, in your partner who you believe is hurting, betraying, but is hurting you. So in other words, the voice isn't coming from you now. It's coming from your partner, at least in your mind. So this line of questioning, I find to be very valuable because in my experience, it helps the other person begin to challenge and soften the unwavering certainty regarding the validity of that critical inner voice. By questioning the absolute truth of these self-critical thoughts, we try to help them create a little space for alternative perspectives and interpretations. And you may have noticed, and this is the most important piece, I am not giving them alternative perspectives because, as I mentioned before, when you try to reassure somebody who's anxious, they blot you out. So the goal is to help them develop the capacity to begin to reflect on their own critical thoughts. And if you could do that, this process then allows them to gain a more balanced and realistic understanding of themselves and their experiences, ultimately reducing the power of the critical, aggressive voice, and subsequently alleviating the associated anxiety. You may have noticed that I'm not directly targeting your anxiety. Instead, I'm addressing one of the causes that leads to the anxiety. And I think, as you know, if you've listened to any of the prior episodes, this is the psychodynamic approach. Is I don't work on the manifest level of the symptom presentation. You have to acknowledge that, of course, and get as close to it as possible. But we want to get close to it to better understand what's causing the anxiety in the situation. So with that in mind, my focus isn't solely on the visible symptoms, but rather on the underlying, oftentimes hidden, you know, I put this in quotes, real issues that contribute to your anxiety. In my work with anxious individuals, in part, I say in part because it depends on what's driving the anxiety, but in part, the goal is to help you develop the capacity to contain and process these aggressive urges by way of recognizing, which again is not always easy, because as I said earlier, the anger might be hidden and working quietly behind the scenes. But if you can, you want to begin to recognize, confront, and subsequently understand what's all this anger and hostility really about. On the surface, when I see anxiety, what I begin to think almost immediately is, one is unable to process these deeper emotions effectively. So in other words, I'm already thinking, what is going on inside this person that leads up to the anxiety? When one is not able to recognize and process anger, shame, embarrassment, humiliation, I could keep going. These are just some of the ones that we covered. We didn't even get into separation anxiety. And I've mentioned it in prior episodes, but that's a whole nother cause of anxiety. All of these emotions are what we call in my field, undigested. In other words, if you can't recognize, process, contain, and work through something, then these emotions come out as, in this example again, anxiety. Okay. So there you have it, the relationship between anxiety, aggression, and narcissism. I hope I was able to present to you a very different way of thinking about your anxiety. As always, please feel free to reach out to me with any questions, comments, or thoughts about any of the causes that lead to anxiety. I would be delighted to hear from you. If you're interested in learning more about the various facets of narcissism, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. Also, don't forget to check out my YouTube channel for additional content and insights. All right, until next time, as always, engage your mind, not your anxiety. Bye for now. Disclaimer alert. The Narcissism Dakota podcast is provided for general information purposes only. The content presented in this podcast is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any psychological condition related to narcissism. The content on this podcast should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. For specific advice pertaining to narcissism or any other psychological condition, you could reach me directly. I am an experienced mental health practitioner who is always taking on new patients. If you would just like a consultation, I can do that too.